Chapter 8. Silver took a week off. George's effect on him turned out to be as dynamic as his own upon Jamie. He phoned Silver Fox and announced that he was done with the ambassador, who should probably be in jail for the way he treated his wife and kids, and definitely belonged on the agency's list of abusers. His boss, who valued her golden eggs, chose not to argue with the goose, and so he picked up his car from the blindingly expensive visitor's car park in the tower block and blazed out of the city into the sunset light. He managed almost 3 days at home, in the smart, new-built, meaningless house he'd bought when his fortunes had improved. Hundreds of other precisely similar houses lined the streets around it, and that had suited Silver too, to be able to vanish from both sides of his world. But there was nothing to do. He'd grown up in intimate, messy battles with the houses where he'd lived, learning, gender distinctions again, to stand in for an absentee father with plumbing and electrical skills. He missed damp corners, peeling paint, the smell of other lives. He phoned Andrew Fenchurch on the flimsy pretext of wanting some plans drawn up for an extension and casually asked after Jamie. Drew, cheerfully indiscreet, had roared with laughter. Jamie was fine, and George too, no doubt thanks to Silver. If Drew had his time again, he'd train as a plumber, he would, or a vet, or... Silver listened, smiling, while he floundered around for a word. He sounded just like his brother when trying to dig himself out. Anyway, he said, Silver should pop into the office next time he was in town. Silver promised to do so. While he was at his desk with the phone in his hand, he had a couple of other admin tasks to clear away. He unlocked a drawer, removed a leather-bound black book, not by any means little, not after this long in the game, and looked up a number or two at London Central Council. He mowed his patch of lawn, picked up a long-neglected guitar and several books, went out for dinner with a guy he'd been sporadically trying to romance, ditched him before dessert hit the table, unable to think why he hadn't done so before. On the third day, he gave it up and packed a bag for Derby. He could stay with his sister, visit his nephews, who thought he was something hush-hush in the city, and weren't wrong. Before he could leave, a phone beeped from across the room where he'd left it to charge. His second mobile, carried quietly in a hidden jacket pocket, disconnected entirely from his life as a Silver Fox. He hadn't heard that two-tone summons in so long that he'd begun to wonder if his work in that other world was done. He took the phone off its cable and sank down onto the couch to read. The text was a series of code words and numbers, meaningless to anyone but him. He looked at his open bag. Not the magical leather one, from whose depths intuition and specialised stockpiling so often allowed him to pull out the right toy for a client. Just a plain carry-all. The contents, minus presents for his sister, would do for a trip. His kitchen had a drawer with reinforced sides and a sturdy lock. Silver took out of it what he needed, and locked up inside it the Silver Fox phone. He changed out of the absurd Hawaiian shirt he wore to make his nephews laugh and groan at Uncle Sil. In front of the mirror, in jeans and a scuffed leather jacket, he ruffled his hair out of its perfect cut, and then he turned away. He put the flash car into the garage, locked up the house, and made his way down back streets to a parking lot by the railway line. The dusty, pollen-specked banger he drove out looked like a million others anywhere. Silver disappeared. Early afternoon. The sun high over roaring, buzzing London. Time for my daily brisk walk through the streets of Oakvale. No designer tracksuit now. Just the well-cut, comfortable clothes I'd gone out and bought for myself at last. I'd folded up my two tight suits and the fancy, uncomfortable gear I'd worn for Melchior's concert nights and the endless Hampstead parties, had it all dry cleaned and bagged up for Oxfam. There was a big branch right here in the Vale. I'd walked away, head spinning slightly with relief, gleeful cries of the old ladies who staffed the place fading out behind me. I'd taken my lunchtime walk here every day since my last meeting with Silver. Soon, I'd have to find streets without an army of JCBs beginning to foregather in a vacant lot, without memories of an impossible lover in every shadow of the oaks. As wallowing went, though, it beat the hell out of missing Melchior and staring at the inside of Drew's office walls. In Oakvale, I could look at something beautiful before it was destroyed. And when I yearned for silver, it was with a clean, new pain, not a wash of my own inadequacies and mistakes. Still, I knew I'd made a big one. I'd panicked when Syl had asked me out. The sense of freefall into a new life had overwhelmed me. Speaking about the loss of my baby boy, even those few words, had set off firecrackers of unprocessed grief. I'd gone home that night, locked myself up in the spare room, taken out my one remaining photo of Daniel and wept. In the morning, I'd phoned Jess, startling the daylights out of her. But once she got over her shock, she talked to me gladly enough. Yes, she was well. Yes, she'd been happy. A house full of kids, and grandkids too now, believe it or not. She'd never forgotten Daniel. Never would. She asked me to meet her family sometime, meaning it, and I said I'd love to, meaning that too. A new life might mean nothing more fearful than healing the wounds from the old. Admitting they were there, at any rate. I'd said no to Silver because I'd tried for happiness in a difficult human world, where children died and marriages failed, and people got locked into dead-end jobs, none of it through any fault of their own. All this could have happened to anyone. What would I say if he asked me again? Stupid bloody question. The week that had gone by since my goulash lunch with Syl had taught me that. I'd seen him since, just a glimpse across the road near Ettrick Tower where Jamie took his boyfriends. I'd felt like a stalker, hanging around to make sure he got in and out all right. I'd been pretty subtle though, I was certain I hadn't been spotted. I'd love to, I'd tell him, if ever he asked me again. I'd love to go out with you, Syl. The cafe was just down the road. Pleasant Gardens. This street was absurdly, enchantingly named, as if some long-ago civic planner had been hopelessly optimistic, or on drugs. It was living up to its title today, the May breeze making the oak leaves dance, the junk shops and bakeries open-doored to the sun, their owners taking a break on the steps or gathering to chat with passers-by. No doubt if I got closer, I'd hear them exchanging anxious thoughts about the future. All my bright ideas about urban renewal and sustainable energy schemes were too little too late now. Still, Silver had listened to me as if they'd mattered. Fuck, I missed him. I stopped on the pavement, pretending to read a community protest flyer tied to a lamppost. A clean pain it might be, but it still knocked the breath from my lungs. I smiled and said hi to the guy who owned the herb shop, to the handful of passing mums, kids and pensioners I was beginning to know by sight from my daily visits here. Then, running out of excuses, I turned and looked at the house across the road. This one had a wilderness garden that ran from the shabby front door all the way to the wrought iron railings by the curb. The once lovely, stained glass bay window was cracked across some panes, others boarded up. Just another three-story terrace in a long row, but there was a magic about it. For sale too, the owner taking a jump before the compulsory purchase order pushed. I took out my phone. It looked nicer still through the camera lens, as places can do when we've started to assign to them our own crazy visions and dreams. The shutter clicked. Not letting myself think, I attached the picture to a text, added a note. This one would do. Addressed it to Silver and hit send. Before I had time for regrets, to start wondering what the bloody hell Silver would make of that, or of me, a high-pitched wail cut the air behind me. The cries of babies anywhere still had the power to stop me in my tracks, looking for trouble and the means to stop it, but this one. Good grief! It was Minnie Mel! Barely visible in the gorgeous trappings of an elaborate pram, but definitely the same puce little face I'd first seen emerging in the lift in Knightsbridge. Melchior and Sabrina were oblivious to me, locked in debate outside the window of a shop called, unforgivably, Vintage Forever. For heaven's sake, Sabrina declared, turning to the bedizened scrap in the pram. You've woken him, Melchior. I've woken him, Wasn't it your shriek of incomprehensible delight over this revolting green enamelled bloody meat grinder? I've told you, my mother had one like that. I'm nesting. And can't you find one that might match the rest of your nest? I've seen that shade of green in Crispin's nappies, I swear. And didn't you already order a blender from Harrods? A blender, Mel? This is a grinder. How many times have I told you, Sabrina? If you don't want me to call you Sabby Pants the way your sister does, don't call me. This was getting out of hand. I abandoned my safe station by the lamppost. Hi, Sabrina. Hi, Melchior. Aren't you two both vegetarians? Of course we are, Melchior snapped. She's gone nuts for vintage kitchenware, though, and... Oh, George! Sabrina whipped round. George! She shrieked, making the baby yowl in sympathy. She pushed the pram aside and shot over to me. George! My knight in shining afterbirth! Oh my God! I tell Melchior every day what a hero you were. So calm and stern. Get those knickers off right now, young lady! She burst into giggles. I could see that the story might have palled on Melchior, but she was irrepressible, fragrant and blazingly beautiful, turning heads all the way up and down the street. I stood as still as I could under the shower of kisses. Pretty sure I never said exactly that, Sabrina. Well, you saved the day. You saved Crispin. Come and meet him. I was going to say, but of course you two already know each other. She darted back to the pram and began to unpackage the mewling scrap from inside. She glanced up at me, the breeze catching her fine hair. And I fucking hated Melchior for changing the game so late in both our lives, but I could see his point. She was scatty and noisy, but entirely lovable. Her smile increased, as if she'd read my thoughts. Thank you for signing off on the divorce papers, George. I know it must have been hard for you, but Mel and I are just so bloody happy. Noisy, scatty, and tactless. I didn't care, but Melchior blenched. Sabrina, for God's sake. What? Oh, is it one of those things we don't talk about in the street? The list is endless, George, as you probably know. Money, sex, nappies. Poor Mel thought he was getting some kind of debutante. But I was an office girl in Wapping until the scout picked me up. I swear, it's like My Fair Lady in our house sometimes. She extricated Crispin, who blew a bubble at her. Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? Here, take him. Sabrina, no! Melchior stepped between us. His embarrassment had given way to a deeper emotion. George doesn't like to... That is, he lost his own... Hot surprise washed over me. Melchior, so remote, so wrapped up in his music. He knew about my son, but hadn't breathed a word in 20 years, any more than I had. Stupid of me to think that meant he didn't care. It's okay, Melchior. I managed, voice reduced to a scrape. Give him here. Let's see you, you chunk. Beaming, Sabrina placed him in my arms. He barely weighed more than a rabbit, but he had that heaviness of recent arrival on Earth, a kind of gravitational force. My boy Daniel would have been a young man by now. Suddenly, without meaning to, I wished and willed all the chances and strength of that lost life into this one. The effort ripped something out of me. Tears spilled down my face. Crispin, eh? I said shakily, stroking the creased little brow with one fingertip. That would get him bullied to death anywhere other than Knightsbridge, but he'll fit right in with all the other little Quentins and Tarquins at nursery there. George, Sabrina said uncertainly, why are you crying? What did you lose? You didn't lose your... She was too new a mum to bear such a story. It's all right, I said, handing the baby back to her. Planted a kiss on her peach of a cheek. It really is all right. He's a gorgeous lad. Will you bring him round to see me sometimes? Oh, all the time. We'll never be away. He already loves hearing about how he was born. Mel wants us to say he arrived at the Kensington Wing, but you can't keep a lid on a story like that, can you? It is too good to waste. I walked up to Melchior, who swallowed hard. Melchior, congratulations. I really mean it. I'm sorry I dragged my feet over the divorce. It was just... Oh, God! Don't apologise to me. I never meant to hurt you. I never... He gave up on whatever he'd been trying to say. He closed his eyes and grabbed me. And the movement and the moment were so familiar that I grabbed him in return. He hadn't changed his shampoo or cologne. He buried his face against my neck, and I held him, rocking, feeling for the last time his small, elegant frame, the way his bones fitted against mine. Sabrina gave a shivery sigh. Oh, George, you're so lovely. I'm sure you'll meet someone soon. I let Melchior go. Some temporary madness laid hold of me. Perhaps it was the summer air, or just the need to take the trace of pity out of Sabrina's eyes. My heart was beating too fast. Love and hope and loss sloshing around inside me, like paper boats on the Serpentine. I think I already have. He's called Silver. Silver? Oh, that's dashing. What does he do with a name like that? Sail the seven seas of the stock exchange? No point in concealment, was there? I'd blabbed about his existence, so in for a penny. Besides, I was proud of him, from the top of his beautiful skull to the toes that had pressed mine beneath the hotel table during our game of chess. Silver's an escort, a sex worker. I needn't have worried about startling the concert pianist with my risque new connections. Melchior was entirely caught up on something else, eyes wide and fixed on mine.
You met someone?
Sabrina rounded on him.
Melchior! It's been more than a year. Why on earth shouldn't he?
She returned her attention to me, and her famous wicked smile blossomed out, the one that sold dreams and promises from here to Sydney Harbour.
A sex worker, she echoed. George Fenchurch, you minx!
Well, I don't know if I stand a chance with him, so don't get too excited. I grinned, letting go of Hampstead decorum. But he is a hottie, yeah. Keep your fingers crossed for me.
I will!
And now I've got to go. Job interview, believe it or not. Melchior made a visible effort to collect himself and take an interest.
That's good news. Civil service again.
I'd as soon have gone to the Oxfam shop, bought back my own old clothes and put them on. Nothing so grand. Just some technical drawing at an architect's in Chelsea. Andrew's been looking after me, but he doesn't really have enough work.
He will soon, though, won't he? I read in The Guardian that this whole place was getting ripped down. They said Fenchurch had the contract for the new build.
That's right, but I don't want... I shut up. I don't want to be involved, would be the poor return to Drew for his kindness. I was only now beginning to appreciate all he'd done. Movement down the street caught my eye. Wow, I said, unable to help myself.
Speak of the devil, Melchior. You'd better look out.
I'd never seen my brother move so fast. He was no more a fan of jogging and gyms than I was. But he was burning up Pleasant Gardens, straight down the middle of the mercifully no-traffic street. His tie had flown back over one shoulder.
George! He yelled as soon as he caught sight of me. George! Hang on! Got to talk to you!
He seemed oblivious to anyone else. But Melchior, to my amused disgust, retreated behind Crispin's pram. Sabrina gaped and gave him a shove. He emerged again, shame-faced.
What does he want, George?
Nothing to do with you, I don't think. Drew almost overshot. I put out a hand to catch his arm. He came to a ragged stop, panting and pink in the face.
George, listen. Hi, Melchior. Sorry about last time, man. Just lost my rag. Do you have it now?
Melchior inquired cautiously.
What? Oh, yeah, rag firmly in place. It's all cool with me, if George is down with it.
I gave his arm a little shake.
Drew, you're talking like a teenager from the 1970s. What's up? I feel like a teenager. Listen, the Digirev deal fell through.
My stomach dropped. I'd helped Drew with a tax return during my make-work year, and I knew how close he'd been sailing to the wind. The loss of this might break him.
What? Fell through how? London Central Council put a sudden block on it, said the planning permission office had failed in their assessment. It's a conservation area now, they said. Trees, lungs of London, cultural amenities, all the usual stuff they roll out when they want to stop the bulldozers. Maybe he felt like a teenager, because he was about to be relieved of his livelihood and the cares of running a business. Helplessly, I began mental calculations for splitting my new draftsman's salary, the one I hadn't yet got, between him and his family. That's a disaster, isn't it? Why are you so excited? He actually took me by the lapels. The council, they've offered Fenchurch Architects the whole contract for local renewal. Renewal? Yeah, dude. He took my shoulders, rattling laughter out of me. I hadn't heard dude in a long time. Fix the houses, boost local business, strategically pollard the trees, all the stuff you used to talk about before you realised we needed DigiRev and shut up. Everything. We don't have the resources for half that. I know, right? I've got to hire a whole bunch of good people right away. I'm starting with you. There's a guy from Renewable Energies in my office right now asking for you by name. Do not go to Chelsea. I won't. His words were sinking in. The oak leaves rustled overhead. Kids shot past us on bikes yelling. My God. Are you sure about this, Drew? We just got an advance so big the juniors had to help carry all the zeros through the door. It's real. We're on. His excitement, along with the presence of a Vogue supermodel in the little street, had started to attract attention. Tough when he had to be, Drew nevertheless loved to give people good news. He turned to the first of the curious faces. Do you live here? Work here? What about you? Is that your shop? It's all saved, folks. Oak Vale is saved. We met Jamie Price in the foyer. I'd almost got over my resentment of him for seeing, touching, being loved by Silver, which had made about as much sense as hating him because he and I both liked the same shop. It was just that in the days after his appointment, he'd looked so damn pleased with himself, so sated and sleek. I remembered that feeling. He'd given his sod of a husband a punch on the snout and left, and that was a good thing. He'd been through more than most. He didn't look pleased now. He was white as a sheet. And my first thought was that I'd have to kill the bearer if London Central had changed their minds and Andrew's new deal was off. He'd had half the Vale gathered around him by the time we left. Sabrina had been signing autographs, Melchior guarding the pram with a style that suited him a lot better than his efforts to hide behind it. A party had been getting underway. No, Jamie called, running to intercept us. Taking an accurate read of Andrew's face and mine, he stopped short in front of us, evading Drew's friendly, steadying hand.
It isn't that. I did something stupid, George. I talked to Lenny about Silver. We had a huge fight. But I didn't win it like I told you. I had to make a run for it and hide.
Drew and I exchanged a glance. All right, he said. Do you need us to call the police?
Maybe, but not for me. I left some of my clothes at the house. I left Silver's card in my pocket. Lenny just called me. Oh, God. He's gone off on one. If he finds Silver, he'll kill him.